is Karen Lyle with Salesport Talk, and I am in the Rolex Middle Sea Race talking with Pavel Savelko. You are from Russia, and you just competed with your boat Mirabel in the Rolex Middle Sea Race. Can you tell us a little bit about sailing in Russia on the Black Sea?
Sailing in the Black Sea is very interesting. I started sailing when I was really young, and my parents live in a small city, Anapa, and in this place, we have interesting weather condition for sailing. It's one of the best places for sailing in Russia. Have many competition in this place. In one day we have the strong wind with a wave. Another day you have waves but light wind. Another day you have strong wind without waves. And every day we can expect a different weather condition. It's very nice for training, for sailing, and but the city is this, and not so much people in Russia in this, and also in this city sailing. Not too much sailors in Russia, and around 15 guys who start sailing in this city. But 10 of these guys was in Russian national team. 3 people was in Olympic Games, and 3 people world champions, and everybody Russian champions in this place. It's a really nice place for sailing in our country.
And you just competed in the Fastnet race as well.
This boat live all time in the Mediterranean. Our base for our boat in the middle of Sicily, it's a city, Licata. It's easy for delivery boat to Rolex competition in Europe. We just delivery boat to north of the Mediterranean for summertime, and the end of the season we come back and very close from Sicily to Malta. And after we have a plan go back to Sicily for winter time for preparing boat for the next season.
And tell us about Rosatom.
Rosatom, it's a nuclear company. It's our sponsor. This company built the power machine for electricity in all the world.
Thank you very much for being on our show, and I appreciate you talking to us. This is Karen Lyle, Salesport Talk.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
All right, thank you so much, and welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you, coast to coast, border to border, and around the world on the American Forces Radio Network. And for those of you watching on Twitch.tv, we have an atlas here which shows the path taken by Randall Reeves, who is now in studio with us, and Karen Lyle for our Salesport.com segment, going around the hemisphere and also in Antarctica. You get a little gist of it right there, and we'll talk to him right now. First of all, Karen, welcome back from Europe. It's great to have you with us. How was your trip?
Well, it was fantastic, and it's good to see you in person. We've been talking from London, Barcelona, Malta, you know, and it's been nice. It's nice to be here in person in San Francisco.
Great stuff. So I remember reading an article in the San Francisco Chronicle recently about Oakland native Randall Reeves, and he's in studio. You can see him on the Twitch cameras. 40,000 miles, starting here in San Francisco, going around Cape Horn, then going around Antarctica, just to warm up a little bit, back around the Cape again, going up, always stopping in Halifax, and then taking sort of the Northwest Passage, yep. And then coming back around through the Aleutians.
Yep.
What was the genesis behind this idea?
Well, I came back home in 2013 from a circumnavigation of the Pacific on a much smaller boat and a two-year trip, and I discovered that I really fell in love with ocean passage making. I very much enjoyed arriving in a port, but it was really the ocean crossing that bit me hard. And I got back home and said, honey, my dear wife, I'd love to keep doing things like this. And she says, well, you may, but make sure whatever you do is really, really big. So I couldn't think of anything bigger than actually incorporating two historic, super long routes in high latitudes.
And you must have a great wife because you would not be doing any dishes or laundry during this time away.
Well, I'm doing my own dishes and laundry, but I'm not doing hers for sure.
Randall, one of the things I was curious about is what was your relationship with food on this journey? Because you had to, we were talking about dishes and laundry.
Sure.
So tell us, what did you eat and how did you handle that while you were underway? Because you're
sure.
not sleeping more than 2 hours.
90 minutes at a time.
Right.
Not like just 90 minutes, but 90 minutes at a stretch was the sleep cycle. The deal with sleep was I could sleep as many 90-minute cycles as I like, but no more than 90 minutes because you got to make sure the boat's going in the right direction and you're not being about to get run down. The boat that I have is called Moleesh. It's a big boat, 45 feet, lots of capacity, lots of carrying capacity. No fridge, no freezer, no water maker, but I can carry lots and lots of food. I left San Francisco in September of 2018 with a full year's supply of provisions in canned goods and dried goods. So, you know, pastas, rices, quinoas, and then canned meats, canned vegetables. So I eat oats in the morning, I nibble for lunch, and then I make the same five entrees throughout the course of a week every night. I make enough at night for two meals, but it's always one pot stuff. You know, everything goes in the same pot. It's all stew of some sort or another.
I remember about 15 years ago on this show, I was doing it. There's a guy named Bruce Schwab who was in this thing called the Vendée.
I know him, yeah.
Classic. And
for
he
sure.
would call in once a week on his satellite phone, and
really?
It was very interesting to see where he was. But while not in an armada, he did have other racers that were sort of in the era. So you being all alone, I think about, you know, the Robert Redford movie All Is Lost. He wakes up to find out that he's hit a container floating around. What's that like when do you just look at the horizon and go, okay, I can take a nap now?
Pretty much, right. The boat is set to go in a particular direction. The wind is on the sails in a particular way, and you're convinced that you have a clear path. So, yes, you head down below and put yourself to sleep for a while. So the boat has radar, mm-hmm. and the boat has a device called AIS, which allows the boat to see other shipping, other commercial traffic in the area. So I've got two electronic means of keeping watch.
There's an alarm.
And there's definitely alarm, two speakers in the two parts of the boat. So that, yeah, there's just no way I could ever sleep through that.
Wow.
So I have electronic means of keeping watch while I'm sleeping. The 90-minute cycle is more to make sure the boat is still on course, mm-hmm. you know, going in the right direction. I don't need to reef or unreef or things like that.
So a little more advanced than the Contiki then.
A touch, yes. But then I'm by myself, so I need a little help.
Oh, that's true.
So you also have a relationship with the ocean now, I would say, after 40,000 miles, that you've really become well acquainted with more than one ocean.
Uh-huh.
What is it? Is there anything about the difference in one ocean to another or about the experiences there that you might want to share with us? Because you have a lot of time to contemplate this.
For sure. It is unbelievably rewarding to travel long distances north, south, east, west, and to get to feel that difference, right? In the middle latitudes, you have the trade winds, wind blowing strongly in one particular direction for days and weeks. Then you've got the doldrums where there's nothing at all at the equator. And then you get down into the Southern Ocean, and the Southern Ocean is blowing almost all the time, 25, 30 knots, seas of 15, 18, 20 standard. That's just the average. There's no land down there to stop the storm systems as they roll through. So you're experiencing low after low, a gale, you know, once a week on average. So it's the difference in texture, you might say, between the middle latitudes versus the high latitudes. So you've got the Southern Ocean where there's no land and all water, and then you get up to the high latitudes north into the Arctic, and it's all land. It's archipelagos and islands and shallow, uncharted waters and ice pack. And so the differences are part of what is, you know, both fascinating and difficult and challenging about the figure eight.
Couple more questions for Randall Reeves in studio here about his 40,000-mile figure eight solo sail. I remember reading a great book about the USS Jeannette, which left San Francisco on a mission. This was right around the time of the Civil War. There were some very respected scientists that opined that actually the North Pole was tropic, and they wanted to get there and see if it was. So I think about, you know, and they got stranded. I think about Shackelford and everyone else. Did that go through your mind as you're, you know, going through? I mean, that is one where you can't put your alarm on. I mean, you got to have eyeballs on the ice, right?
Oh, for sure. And that, part of the challenge in the Arctic is that if there is the ability to go, you're going and you're not sleeping. You're on watch. You're at the tiller. There's no automatic steering the boat through ice. It's a lot of fun, actually, to hand steer through ice pack for about the first 12 hours. And then you start to get tired. And that's when mistakes happen. The joke is my boat left a lot of bottom paint in the Arctic because when you get tired, you start making mistakes. But yes, for sure. The challenge in the Arctic is not so much the pilotage. It's the fact that you could get halfway into this maze and get stuck.
Right.
So the psychological toll that it takes trying to work through this, can I make another 10 miles today? Should I stop and rest for a bit? Will I get stuck and have to turn around and go another 5,000 miles back out before winter sets in? So psychologically, it's a real challenge.
Wow.
This was not a journey you actually made alone because you had birds, you had sea life, you had mammals, you were surrounded by life. The ocean is full of life. It's teeming with life. Is there something that you saw that you'd never seen before? I'm sure there was more than one, but is there something you'd like to tell us about?
Being on the ocean is like being in a perpetual motion machine. Everything around you is moving, often violently, right? The ocean, the waves are moving, the wind is moving, the clouds are moving, the sun and stars, everything's on the go always. And then when you're in the south, 47 degrees south, you wake up one morning, you come on deck, and above the boat is this bird that is quite literally, it looks like it's just hanging there. It's called a wandering albatross. It has an 11-foot wingspan. It's almost twice my height, right?
Wow.
It's huge. Weighs as much as a turkey. And the fact that it can, in this perpetual motion machine, this bird can just hover there, eyeing the boat, trying to figure out if I have any food I can give it, is just, it's remarkable to see those animals.
What's it like on the Cape? Because, you know, we've heard stories of mariners from Europe going around the Cape, and it was a very, very perilous situation. Is it any less perilous these days? I mean, you did it twice.
No, if anything, it's more perilous now.
Wow.
The Arctic, you know, the other end of the world, is experiencing warming and thawing. But the Southern Ocean and Antarctica in particular is, if anything, is getting colder and windier. So it's as challenging at the very least as it was back in the day. And I just happened to get really lucky. No one sees Cape Horn when they go around it. The weather is foul. But I got lucky both times. Very strong wind, huge seas. But the days were clear as a bell, and I could see the Cape. And it's just amazing. That's the Everest of sailing, right? That's the pinnacle for sailing, is getting around Cape Horn. And I got two great photo ops.
You could
110
have, you
days
could have,
apart.
You could have two earrings for that, right?
Is that right?
Yeah, because when you go around Cape Horn, you can have the earring. That's the
I'll tell my wife.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, my dad was in the Navy. When you crossed the equator, you went from a polywog to a shellback, that whole thing. Yeah. So did you ever, all seriousness, hallucinate, lose your mind, get cabin fever, any of that?
Certainly the former. I left San Francisco sleeping in 60-minute intervals because that's what I'd done for short ocean crossings of a month or so. And I found after about 2 or 3 months of that, I was beginning to lose my mind. You know, weak in the knees, you're hearing voices. When you're hearing voices and gunshots, you know something's not quite right. So that's when I started the 90-minute cycles. That gives me enough REM sleep. But for the most part, no, I'm in the zone, right? So
wow. Very disciplined. I love the fact that he calls a month at sea a short voyage.
Well, in the zone, basically, you get you have a mission, and once you've set out for this, you're going to accomplish it. The first time you went around, you didn't make it all the way around, and I think it was your wife said, "Well, can't they come rescue you?" What was the answer to that question?
Well, I'd lost both of my self-steering devices about 500 miles west of Cape Horn, 56 degrees south. Cape Horn is way, way, way down there, way further south than any other landmass, and it's tough. So my first big gale, I lose both the autopilot and the wind vane within the course of a couple of days, and I have to hand steer into Ushuaia, which is one of the most southerly cities in the world. And it's hard work. Big seas and a short tiller on my boat make it really tough. I'm steering, hand steering 12 to 18 hours a day, freezing, because it is just blisteringly cold down there. And after I got back, my wife said that she had called around to some friends who'd sailed down there. And she said, can't the Coast Guard just go get him? And the response was no, because there's no Coast Guard there. There's nobody else there. Somebody told me when I got back that at certain points of the voyage, I was closer to the people on the space station than I was to any humans actually on land, which I found that really fascinating.
Yeah. There's a reason why no one lives there.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. One final question for you, and that is, what's next, or are you well-sated at this point?
I am enjoying being home. I've gone a long time, 13 months at sea by myself. The first long leap of about 31,000 miles was a full 8 months nonstop, right?
Wow.
Didn't even see land except for Cape Horn. So I'm having a good time being home. Fresh food.
Hot shower.
Lovely. Hot showers. Thank you very much. Yes, hot showers are lovely.
Comfy bed.
But I'd love to be able to do that route again, quite frankly. But slowly. I bypassed quite a lot of interesting territory.
That was just your reconnaissance.
Oh, exactly right.
Right. So now you know where you're going to stop.
Yeah.
Right, right. That makes a lot of sense.
I'll squeeze in one more question.
Yes, sir.
Internationally, how have you been recognized by different yacht clubs and sailing societies and such things? Or?
Not that I'm aware of.
Nobody's throwing medals and trophies at you?
Not yet, no. but I'm, it's still early in the game.
Okay.
And the yacht club that saved your bacon on this, that was the cruising club.
The Ocean Cruising Club. Really, yeah. So I crash landed that first attempt. So this is the one I just came back from was my second try. Crash landed on my first attempt a couple of times. It was pretty remote places, and the Ocean Cruising Club really set me up. Had people there to meet me and get me through customs and things like that. But I didn't plan to stop, so I didn't have any plan for how to do all that.
Fascinating story. Randall Reeves, thanks for coming in. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And Karen Lyle, good job. I saw this in the paper, and I thought that'd be cool if we could get him. Good get.
Thanks to Patty Mangan.
Okay, there you go.
I have my team.
All right, there it is. I'm Rick Tittle. We'll take a quick break. Come on back.